two places as possible, and as much of it should be in one single place, so just that you just find what you need without searching long. In OpenBSD, almost all the documentation is in the manuals, and only the few bits of information that just don't fit because they don't belong to something specific are in the FAQ, but there is basically no other place where we have documentation in OpenBSD. Thus, manuals are very important, are very central to documentation for us. So that is what this is about. Where are you starting from? This is a manual in the modern, so what did you say? 20-year-old modern MDoc format. It has the text that should be displayed, and intermixed with it are macros. Some of these contain meta information like the title of the manual and a short one-line description. Some contain logical markup, for example, say that this is the name of the manual. Some contain content, for example, here BSD and Unix. Some are cross references either inside the same manual or to other manuals. And there are also block structures. For example, here you see quoting or a bit at the bottom display blocks. So just to give you a brief impression how the source format looks like, Christoph has said a bit more about it. At this point, I've set the scene for the talk. So I'm going through the history of making all this work in OpenBSD. We had one release for experimenting a bit, one release for seriously training the tool to get up to the job, then one release where the new tool, Mandoc, was really used for formatting nearly all the manuals, and now in the release that came out just 2 weeks ago, we have removed the previous tool and are really fully relying on this one. Near the end of the talk, I'm talking about some recurring topics that came up again and again at all the time during this work, draw some conclusions and show you where we're heading in the future. Of course, just as Christoph said, please, if you want to know more about something or don't understand something, just ask. I think we have enough time for that. So the first half year started only 4 months or so after Christoph had started writing the tool. So he started in late autumn 2008. And then already a few months later, in the spring 2009, he imported the tool into the tree, and a few months later I picked it up, and then we mostly started bug fixing, collecting experience, how it works, talking to various people, establishing the contact so that everybody could get involved who was interested, slowly started setting up a regression tool, but mainly the foal could just graze its pasture and had no serious responsibilities yet for about half a year. But then, starting nearly exactly with the 1st of January 2010, we said, okay, now let's see what we can do with it. And I systematically started to build all the manuals in the tree with it, and of course it didn't work, because Christoph had very nice ideas how this language, this old venerable MDoc language, should be, how people should write their manuals and how they shouldn't. And when Mandoc didn't like certain manuals because it considered them bad style, then it just errored out and said, I don't want to render that. So what we had to do was systematically fixing all the fatal issues. The easy ones we could just fix in Mandoc, improve the program, and those that weren't easy to fix, we just changed the manuals. I think about 100 or 200 manuals got touched in that phase, which is a rather small fraction given that we have several thousand in the tree. So typical things that came up during that time, people opened blocks and didn't close them again, or the blocks didn't nest properly, or there was freeform text in places where macros are required, or blank lines, and so on and so on. Various stuff that needed to be fixed. Let me give you one example, actually the worst one that we came across, because it teaches you also something about the MDoc language. We have here a moderately simple synopsis of a standard Unix command, and you see that these flags are contained in an enclosure that says this is optional. Here in the code, you see you have an optional macro that extends to the end of the line, and everything that comes on that line is contained in that macro. In the syntax tree that Christoph has already shown you in the last talk, so a small reminder here, a bit simplified version, you then see also that the optional block contains the flags element and so on. Remember, this is here. It is very different what the old tool, what ROF did. ROF merely did physical formatting. It had registers to store data. It did macro expansion. Whereas in MDoc, we have high-level macros that build a syntax tree and merely call low-level routines, so to say, for the formatting. So this was basically this change was basically the whole motivation to get a better tool to write Mandoc. Now, great plans, however, what we found in manuals. Look at this example here. Somebody opens an A macro, and then opens a B macro, and then first closes the A macro, and only closes the B macro afterwards. And a wonder, when you render that with Groff, you actually get this. You get two blocks that overlap, but neither contains the other. That's what I call badly nested blocks. Of course, in ROF, that is not a problem, because ROF doesn't really know about the logical structure. It only knows we open an A block, we open a B block, we close an A block, we close a B block. Wow. So we can Mandoc, we can throw away Mandoc, basically, because it doesn't work. It's the wrong design. This is the most typical application. The old tool, ROF, in the 80s had a limitation that one line can only have 9 arguments, so people split the arguments up using a special macro pair XOXC to get all this as an argument to one macro. So it's actually needed for practical manuals. So our first thought to just deprecate it and say that is not how we want the language to be doesn't work, because then the world comes and say, well, it's irrelevant what you want. It is like that. There was no way to change all the manuals. So reluctantly, we implemented just the bare minimum to deal with such stuff. Actually, what I did is that in this example, when you do it with Mandoc, the A block will physically extend around the whole B block, and there will just be an additional marker that says, here is the place where the formatting should end. The block carries on, but please end the formatting here. So that was about the most complicated thing that needed to be done to get real-world manuals render with Mandoc. And within about 2 months, we get all the several thousand MDoc manuals in the OpenBSD tree working. One other thing, there are also manuals in a modern BSD operating system. One big source is Perl, which is using pod2man preformat and preprocessor for man. Another thing is OpenSSL, and there's curses and so on, various stuff. And when you look at these man manuals, you see things like if conditional instructions. You see things like DE, macro definitions. You see stuff like DS. This is a low-level definition for a nicely typeset C++ symbol, which is, of course, horrors. That's not at all the nice high-level MDoc language. That is low-level formatting and programming in ROF, which Christaps never intended to do, but it turned out you need that for...
Absolutely not.
Right. So, and the second time, I sat there and said, oh, I chose a bad project. This is going to fail. We have absolutely no way to get that implemented quickly. But then there was a quick and dirty solution. These are macro definitions. Okay, so let's just pretend the macros that are defined in this Perl preamble were man macros. Let's just implement those macros and ignore the definitions, because the preamble is always the same when it comes from pod2man. These are string definitions. Okay, let's just pretend these are predefined strings. Let's just predefine them, and so on. So that way, so we faked support for these things we could not implement quickly, and got all the man manuals in the tree to work within a few days, basically. So in about 3 months, we could build the whole tree. That's a good place to look back a bit and to ask ourselves what went wrong while we got the tree to build. First thing, we gave the foal half a year to just look around and get acquainted with everything. That was too long. We should have just started earlier. Then probably we would have been able from the start to fix more things, more of the really relevant problems in Mandoc, and do less of workarounds and less of changes to the manuals, which was, by the way, the second problem. We changed 100 or 200 manuals in that time, and it ultimately was not necessary. I think 10 or 20 of them, all except 10 or 20 of them, would render with today's Mandoc. So what we can learn from that as lessons is, first, regarding a thing I said at the very beginning, Mandoc was very picky. By all means, if something goes wrong in your program, report the errors, but don't stop your program. Try to keep going. And try real-world usage of what you are doing as quickly as possible. Move quickly into production, because the code will then really mature when it is used. Here we took a bit too much time. Okay, so what we switched over the tree. You can see here we got Mandoc to build the tree in March 2010. Then a few days later, the OpenBSD 4.7 release was rolled, of course without Mandoc, because we wouldn't want to make all OpenBSD users Guinea pigs. But just after the release was rolled, we put it in, and we linked it to the build. We switched the build to Mandoc. And then there was, of course, a rush of bug reports, but but it was prepared well. And within a week, basically, we get all the serious fallout that really inconvenienced people out of the build, out of the way. But that is not serious, because right after release, everybody is used to the fact that people are putting in stuff and stuff briefly breaks. So having it back to perfectly working condition in a week was fine. Then we had about 4 months to iron out the edges and to get it polished. Remember that thing with Perl, where we just pretended that some macros that aren't man macros are some, to get around the fact that we couldn't parse that preamble. So the problem remained that the mdoc and man languages are built upon the ROF language, but mandoc as a program intended to rip out that whole bottom layer, which didn't work out because real-world manuals do not only use the high-level languages, but also here and there, rarely, but here and there, the low-level stuff. And realizing that we cannot just do the nice part and leave out the real-world ugliness, was a very slow and painful process. And reluctantly, we started edging in some low-level report. Remember, we are already in production. The whole operating system relies on this stuff. And now we start moving it here and moving something underneath to deal with low-level stuff that was forgotten in the design. However, it was quite surprising that worked out just fine. I will show you the reasons why it worked later. And both steps have, in the end, proven just right. That first we started from a very clean, very rigorous high-level design, and then were reluctant to change that, but still edged in those parts that were really required, but nothing else, only what was really required. So this reluctance prevented us from getting off track, and the surprise was that in the end, the changes, the impact to the design was rather little. Now, how could that happen? To understand that, I need to give you a small impression of the mandoc main program. The main loop just reads input files. And then it pushes line after line into the parser backends. The parsers are looking for high-level macros, for example, mdoc macros, and are building the syntax trees that both Chris Dubs and I have shown to you. And those syntax trees, once they are completely ready, so parses the complete file, builds a complete syntax tree, and the whole syntax tree then is given to the front end that will iterate through the syntax tree and produce output. Now we want to put in ROF macros. ROF macros are something that has to do with formatting, so somehow they would have to go in here, but that doesn't work, because at this point we are already in the syntax tree and the low-level macros aren't there anymore. So the only place where we can do it is as a preprocessor. So not because that's particularly nice, but because there's simply no other way. Finally, Chris Dubs tried that. And so now the file is read line by line. The lines are pre-processed line by line. And what results from the pre-processing is fed to the parser backends just as before, line by line. That, however, is a complete paradigmatic switch, because ROF expands high-level macros into low-level requests and then passes the low-level requests to the formatters. Mandoc, on the other hand, first handles the low-level requests in the preprocessor, stays only with the high-level requests that ROF would expand, and passes the high-level code to the formatters. It is completely topsy-turvy then. However, that's exactly what makes Mandoc so nice, because here, in the rough case, you lose all the structural information before you even get near the formatters, whereas in Mandoc, you can keep it. You have the structural information right into the formatters. So this is really a case where a design error turned out to be an asset. But still, that's no explanation why it worked. And it doesn't work in general. Imagine you have some low-level language, you build a high-level macro package on that, then it's very easy to construct an example where it's not possible to first implement the high-level language and then afterwards introduce some, by the backdoor, introduce some aspects of the low-level language after the fact. But here it worked. And you can see why when you look at which specific macros typically show up in real-world manuals. Those are typically very, very trivial low-level formatting instructions. Very trivial ones, because those are typically the ones that cannot be expressed by semantic annotation, high-level annotation. And these we can mostly just ignore. Then there are some that are really complicated that we must error out. So that is the part where I just said it can happen that you cannot do much about it and then that your concept fails. But that means there are some manuals that we cannot build this way, where we must say, in ports land mostly, where we must say, okay, for this port, please use graph. But these are actually with input line traps, I have ideas how we could implement them. So there are really very, very few things that don't work that way. Some need a very partial implementation. For example, conditionals is a quite complicated concept in ROF, with calculating with various types of numbers and registers and whatnot, and nesting and recursion, and very complicated. All we do basically is say, if the condition is we are formatting for the terminal, then it is yes, and in all the other cases it is no. It's enough. I don't say that is particularly smart or complicated, but this is really about doing what is needed. Because the nice thing is the high level, the Mandoc and MDoc, and this is just for getting away with the ugliness that can't be avoided. However, there are also things where we did substantial, nearly complete implementations. For example, string definitions, macro definitions, source file inclusion. However, those are exactly the things that can be done very, very well by a preformed. So string definitions is exactly what a preprocessor does best. Think of CPP or something. So that this topsy-turvydom of the paradigm worked out is the consequence of the specific structure, how manuals use the ROF and the MDoc languages. We were lucky in a way. I'm sorry, I prepared this for a different screen resolution, so some of the slides are a bit mangled. Sorry. This one, it's actually fitting, because I spent one hackathon in Edmonton basically ironing out the small things that were homegrown in OpenBSD, mostly related to stuff in the Synopsys. And this is the one thing, if other operating systems, I don't think I will go into details, if other operating systems want to do similar stunts, replacing Groff with Mandoc for manual formatting, then they will probably run into similar but different issues, that somebody in the history of their system did some tricks in Groff that are not present in other operating systems and need to be worked out in Mandoc, but when that happens to you, we are certainly willing to help with that. Okay, one very important thing in getting all this right was that at some point we needed to find out how good are we? Are we really rendering all those thousands of manuals correctly? You can't read them all. I mean, it would just be taking too much time. So I set up automatic comparison infrastructure within the build system, where I basically, normally I just say build clean man to clean out everything, and then make build man to build the manuals, and then I say something like build diff man to make diffs between the grof output and the mandoc output. Of course, that brings up a tremendous amount of stuff, and then we look at it, find recurring patterns, fix them in mandoc, so that reduces the noise, run it again, find some more, and so on. And at some point, we run into things that maybe we can tweak in grof to reduce the noise, and that way, the stuff got better and better. By the way, many people like to talk about complicated tools. All I want to say about that, don't let the complexity of the tools outgrow the complexity of the problem at hand. So there are really situations where a text file in CVS is the ideal bug tracker. If only that you can see all the bugs with all the relevant information on one look. And if you pay attention that the number of bugs doesn't grow too large, then that's another asset. And it can even help you to realize when there are, say, 80 bugs and you need to do another bug fixing session. Well, certainly the critical points in that whole project were to get reliable parsing. So it is very embarrassing when in the middle of a VAX build, or near the end, that has been running for 2 or 3 weeks, the build dies, and then Mio Vala comes to me and says, oh, my build died because Mandoc errored out. So reliable parsing and of course correct rendering on the terminal were the critical point. But if you have heard the talk by Christaps, you will certainly understand that playing a bit here and there and having fun is very important. I mean, most of the people here will probably do programming and building systems for fun. So also, even though all I've shown so far is basically 1 year of work, we have done a lot of things for fun along the way. Among these are some very nice and very successful projects like XHTML and HTML output, like the Google Summer of Code PostScript and PDF output that Christaps say. There was also at least one that was overdone and turned out to be a dead end, because basically after I had hyphenation mostly done and about the same quality that grof has, with different errors, admittedly, in about 200 lines of code or so, Todd Miller came along and said, oh, it would probably be better if we do not hyphenation, because then we can search better. And so it was never put in, but it was fun. So that's... and you see, such things were done all the time. HTML was very early, even before we started seriously working towards switching. And also very, very late, so this is long after switching that we finally also switched the PostScript manual build that is not enabled by default in the OpenBSD tree. Okay, so all of the country but one little village somewhere in the northwest Actually, I'm now talking about 15 pages or so that we didn't handle at the time. Those were pages containing TBL tables, mostly in curses. We long hesitated what to do about it. It is not quite clear. Because what Groff does in that case, you have inside the manual a section that is started by a specific macro, ended by a specific macro, and what is in between is pre-processed by this special program, TBL, converted to low-level ROF, and then fed back into the input stream. And of course, that's completely contrary to anything Mandoc does, because Mandoc would never be able to process that low-level input. It's horrid, that input. So we hesitated and were not sure what to do about it. So long that nearly we missed the release. And finally I said, okay, there is no good way. The only way to get on with this is that I deliberately chose the minimal route. I just took Christoph's tool, he had standalone tool he had written, and plugged it in at that point in the code, not where it belonged, but where it was the least effort, that is, directly into the high-level code, and got the thing working in the sense of it formatted the manuals correctly within a weekend, and then immediately relied on it for production. So just switched over those pages from building with Groff to building with Mandoc, and a day later disabled Groff in the OpenBSD base build. And then Christaps, on the same day, I disabled Groff, such that it was not installed in OpenBSD current anymore, said, oh, this is horrible. I will never do this. I will never integrate this into Mandoc because it's so ugly and it makes Mandoc so much bigger. Well, it took about 2 months until he had a really clean and really nice integration for it. And actually, we are now considering to use the same sort of integration, basically interpreting as we should the macros starting and ending these TBL blocks as low-level ROF macros, and then calling the TBL processor of the main program, that is as it should be. We are now aiming to use the same way for EQN equation support, and that is another nice thing about an old system. You have lots and lots and lots of preprocessors and auxiliary tools. I think the next then will be CHEM for chemical formula and so on. Somebody, Ryan, was it you? You asked for PIC, right? PIC is a ROF package for presenting pictures. Yeah, so why was it possible to really disable Groff as soon as we had this table problem solved also? I need to credit Mark Espy foremost in this respect, because he prepared a Groff port for the OpenBSD ports tree and prepared the OpenBSD package management tools to make this new Groff port a prerequisite, a build dependency for each and any port having manuals, more than 3,000 ports. So we could, just after disabling Groff in base, we could switch the port tree due to the work that Mark Espy had done on it. And then exactly the same, no? if you look here, the first release with Mandoc was rolled on in August last year. Then we hesitated a long time, but finally I did this trick with TBL. We switched over, and then basically in a week, again, we got ironed out all the serious fallout. The time was not chosen by chance, but we did it at a time where there was a hackathon right afterwards. I already knew when switching that a week later I would be going to Budapest to the ports hackathon. And it was needed because we had one serious fallout. Somebody talked about GL manuals already today. Those got completely broken due to problems in the build system, and also many X11 manuals got broken because they are using this file inclusion raw flow level macro .so. So I quickly then implemented .so for Mandoc in Budapest. To make the long story short, the serious fallout was fixed quickly, and again, we had, even though we started a bit late, we had several months to watch it. We had, after really enabling it, good feedback from lots of users and could really find bugs. Also in that phase, many bugs in Mandoc were found in Portsland, which we would never have found if we wouldn't have pushed for it to be used really in production and in standard applications. Well, at this point, perhaps before coming to the general, to the three general point recurring topics, a first part of the conclusions. What we did, essentially, we implemented a small family of rather simple languages, but turning the whole paradigm of these languages upside down, focusing on remaining compatible where it matters. So the goal is, and that's also what you can see in the wild, if you take any manuals, no matter where they come from, formatting them with Grof and format them with Mandoc, almost always they will look the same. Or if they don't, at least Mandoc is supposed to throw errors and to say this is likely not going to look good. Of course, we cannot do everything yet, even after the second release. On the other hand, we flouted compatibility where it would be just a hindrance. So those parts of the low-level ROF language, I think about 80 or 90% of the low-level ROF language that we don't need for manuals, we didn't implement. That would just have stolen our time for no good. So this done means now other systems like FreeBSD or NetBSD, if they see a benefit, can do the same if they want, without much risk and without having to fear major surprises. And if you stumble on the way and something looks weird, just mail us and ask for help, because we have done it and we can probably help you out. And even if it turns out that the problems you have in FreeBSD or NetBSD are slightly different and need further fixes in Mandoc, we are grateful for bug reports that you find in different trees. Of course, Christaps is also for a long time monitoring how Mandoc performs in the FreeBSD and the NetBSD tree. And also in the FreeBSD, Ulrich Spörlein, UQS at FreeBSD, has systematically built the tree with it. I don't know the exact status, but so you could also ask Ulrich, who will know a lot about it. The recurring topics. So three things came about again and again during all that time, during all the releases. One thing that can hardly be overestimated is error and warning messages your tool produces. Why is that so important? Suppose you produce an error message to standard error, or that is too short, that is even missing, that is too generic, then users will have a really hard time to figure out what is wrong with their input. If you have if you neglect sending a warning message when the input is dubious, that's also dangerous because users might use dangerous idioms and not even notice. And then they port their manual pages to another system using another rough implementation, and suddenly it breaks. So you really need to tell the users when something is wrong. On the other hand, if you overdo it, if there are only a few warnings that are annoying, then users will probably switch them all off, because you don't want to be spammed all the time with stuff you know is irrelevant. Yeah. Yet an answer to that seems to be, okay, I add a number of knobs and let the user choose how many messages she or he wants to see. Very bad idea, because then the users won't remember all those knobs and won't use them because they can't remember them. So at most one or two knobs, but not more. And when they don't use all those knobs, you are back that you have either too few or too many messages, and either users don't know what they do wrong and are frustrated because they can't get their stuff right, or they do crap and don't even realize. So it's really important. There is a danger. You can overdo it in both directions at the same time. You can have both too few and too many messages. So when the important ones are lacking and you have lots of... And actually, with Mandok at the beginning, it had too few, too many, and too many knobs. And so what we have been doing all the time is remove knobs, add important messages, downgrade messages of less relevance from fatal to error to warning, and add warnings where they were missing, and remove irrelevant warnings. So this is quite... by the way, Mandok has a lint mode. If you say... The interface is very simple. If you say Mandok input file, then you get a formatted page. If you say Mandok-t lint input file, then it tells you all the warnings and errors. And if you say Mandok-t lint W error, that's the second knob, then you get only the errors, and that's probably all you need to know. Second thing, horses don't like those things, but they are always there. And when you fix bugs, you often use test files anyway, because you need to see whether the code changes you did really fix the problem. So you often write small test input files. Just collect those. At the beginning, that is not very important because you have lots and lots of bugs and all of them are new. And you have not yet many tests. But still, it costs little to just collect them in a structured way. But then when the code matures, without much effort, your tests pile up, and in the end, you have a fair number of them. And magically, at about the same time, they also become more important, because when the code matures, chances are when you do the next bug fix, you will reintroduce a former bug. So the current state with respect to our test suite is that whenever I do major merges in OpenBSD, because Christophs has had another flurry of activity and has improved lots of things, now my test suite really typically finds a few bugs that I can go after and fix right away that would otherwise have gone out to our users and set them on flame. So really start collecting early and then continuously spend some time keeping your test suite up to date. And specifically here for Mandok, one of the most important lessons is that there is nothing wrong with putting in preliminary code that may even be ugly and then rip it out again better when you have time to do it better, or when it really aches you to do it better. On first sight, that seems inefficient. However, it's perfectly sane because the first implementation explores the feature and gets you into production. And then the second implementation does it right. It is often very, very difficult to get a perfect implementation right away, in particular if it's a difficult problem where you don't exactly know which is the best way. However, what is very important, don't let the first one sprawl. You really need to rip it out before it can't be ripped out anymore, because otherwise you end up with crappy software. So I've looked at the history and have actually found five instances of this pattern in the development of Mandoc. The end of sentence detection I originally did. Christops did better later on. My first implementation of rough conditionals that was horrible and limited to man was later on the reason why our whole rough library was written in a better way. The stunt with the pot to man preamble I've spoken about in length. The rough registers implementation, it was enough to just float the patch to trigger a better patch, and so on. So, to the conclusions. We started coding from the nice high-level stuff that gave us a very clean overall design. We etched in only those parts of low-level ugliness data that were really needed, even while the tool was already in full production. And that was possible because we kept things small and simple. Of course, if you have a horrendous system that is extremely complicated and try to fiddle around in the guts, then all will break and everybody will hate you. But if you pay attention that your tool is small and simple, then you can fiddle around even in the guts when needed. So another reason why you should shun complexity, two of the reasons are very well known, correctness and security, but flexibility and being able to get your tools tuned to the point, exactly to the point where you need them, is important also for keeping stuff simple. And then, specifically with respect to a replacement project, I think in the BSD world that is not so uncommon that you have replacement projects, because some GPL code is lurking here and there, and some rusty Sun code is lurking here and there, and there's some things you need to do better. To make a replacement project succeed, it is really important to put your work to real-world use as quickly as possible and to not let it rot in some corner of the operating system where nobody uses it. Because then when nobody uses it, you get no bug reports, you have no motivation for making it better because you know that nobody is using it. Why should you waste your time on it? On the other hand, when people call you and send you mail and say, hey, this is great, however, this and that doesn't work exactly as I would expect, then you know what you are working for, you get on, and people realize this is going onward and are motivated to really talk to you, and everybody profits. So keep moving fast, don't fear change, but on the other hand, do not trap your users with incompatibilities. So it's not a good idea to say, I do it all better, and I start up by saying the language or the whatever I'm working should be like this, and then a user says, yeah, but what I have here is a bit different, and you say, well, if it were different, it were better, then the conversation would be finished, because the user says, maybe it would be better, but it doesn't work for me, and he goes away. So you should not fear change in the tools, but you should make sure to stay compatible. Yeah, so you need to keep the balance. Only change things when they really make a difference. Don't break behavior so you find users, because you need the users to get bug reports and to get on with stuff. The future. One thing I think I wrote into the proposal of this talk as a future direction would be moving to a more modern graph. At the time we set out for this project 1.5 years ago or 2 years ago, we had graph 115 that was by that time already a decade old or so, and still had the 9 limit arguments, so quite buggy. And half a decade later, there had been a big rewrite that had never been merged back to the tree, because merging large third-party software and then C++ into a tree is horrendous work. Nobody likes to do it. You know that probably. So it was never updated, and I said, okay, a future thing we could do was move to graph 120. Now that I'm here, we are already at graph 121. The advantage, so it turns out that this started out as a graph replacement project, and now even graph users and people who love graph profit. Because in Base, we could never move beyond 119 due to GPL issues. Graph 119 that FreeBSD and NetBSD have is still GPL v2. Graph 120 is already v3. However, in the ports tree, that doesn't matter. So moving it from the Base system to the ports tree allowed us to not get hurt by the GPL v3 and to use the newest graph where possible. And it really has some additional features. This is just what I extracted from the changelog. Like XHTML output, of course, with graph can't work very well because it first throws away all the high-level information and then tries to convert to XHTML from low-level stuff, which can't work. That's not the, it's not the fault of the graph autos, but of the whole principle. But still. However, there are also things that are really for the future. The next thing I'm keen on doing is stop installing pre-formatted manuals in OpenBSD. In the past, we needed to install pre-formatted manuals because on a VAX with graph, you don't want to wait for the K-shell man page to render just to look up what exactly the options to your shell built in command were. It would take too long. You would sit there. With Mandoc, it just works. You can have the unformatted K-shell manual installed on a VAX, and it comes up in fractions of a second, rendered in real time. Of course, you also never want to cache manuals, because then you want to formatted manuals. Then you would need to install the man program, setuid or setgid, what is from a security standpoint embarrassing. Once that is done and we have unformatted manuals in the installation, then we can rewrite apropos and make what is. Christoph's talked about it in more detail to deliver much more information. Imagine at the command line just saying apropos Jeker and seeing all the tools that Claudio wrote. Or, okay, well, what? Right. Whatever. And then, as a next step, I need to convince Bob to switch our web server to use that as well. It will make things much better, much easier, because the current man CGI is a horrific thing that tries to extract information from already marked up for display, as a text for that is already marked up for display, which can't really work very well. So it will also make that part cleaner and more powerful. around that time, yeah. Of course, there are also quite some projects regarding functionality. For example, a port to MDoc would be nice to have, because MDoc can store much more structured information. So maybe this would also make Perl manuals and such more powerful. What would be very useful would be a translator from MDoc to MAN. The point is that some very, very portable projects like Sudo want to have their man pages rendered everywhere, even on systems where people don't want Groff but rely on old, say, Heirloom Trough or something, implementations that don't have MDoc. Now, if you can translate from MDoc to MAN, then you can do that in the build and just distribute the MAN version in the tarball without maintaining it. Also implementing a MAN to MDoc converter, which is, of course, technically much more difficult because you need heuristics to find the right markup, would be nice because it would help in those projects where we still have old-style MAN manuals to move it to the modern MDoc format. And of course, bug fixing, missing functionality, there's lots of things to do, and I hope to see some bug reports from you guys when you use it in practice. So, thanks to Christophs for writing that thing, because otherwise they would have nothing to do. Thanks to Jörg Sonnenberger from NotBSD, who contributed really important code and hosted an excellent hackathon. Jason McIntyre is very important because without him, I would probably not have built up the necessary know-how about MDoc format in the necessary time frame. And also Theo, even though he understands very little of this thing, was important because he got Christophs to import that thing. Otherwise, I would probably missed the whole project. And he pressed to make OpenBSD developers and users the guinea pigs for this, and always said, commit this, we need to get on. Actually, the guinea pigs seem to enjoy and not complain. And there are lots and lots of other people who contributed. So, questions? Show me. Object dump cut. Okay. Well, I like bug reports. I will look at that right after with that. Yeah. Ah. Okay. Yeah. And one other thing during the thanks, perhaps, the GNU people, in particular Werner Lemberg, have actually been quite helpful and answered questions and helped us to get along. So we really don't want to bash them, but to work together with them. Because remember, the goal of MANDoc is not to replace and obsolete GNU-ROF completely. GNU-ROF cannot be obsoleted for the purpose of general purpose typesetting. This is just about Unix manuals, and maybe in the long term a bit more. But we need, even in the very long term, we need to make sure compatibility of implementation of the various macro packages and also the base ROF language. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, the pictures. So, other questions? Nothing. Okay. Thank you.